When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 79. We're coming to you with a very special post-Wrestle Kingdom 13 live show. We're letting people listen in live, you know, seeing it, just testing that out, basically, and seeing if anyone's interested in that. Basically, I'm here with two guests right after Wrestle Kingdom 13. If you're listening later, it's Friday morning Eastern time on January 4th. We do have a bunch of people watching already. Okay, cool. Thank you if you're watching it live and if you're listening back later on as well, because we'll release this as a regular episode of the podcast too. Just basically we'll all be talking about Wrestle Kingdom, probably a little bit on the shorter side because we're all very tired.
Very tired.
So let me introduce my guests. Jack, you've been here before. So welcome back to the show, Jack. How you doing?
I'm doing good. As I said, very tired. Kenny lost, but, you know, he's still got to deliver the wrestling enthusiasm. So yay, wrestling.
Yeah, and you're the voice of Kenny positivity on the episode.
I don't know. It's very conflicting, is all I have to say.
But yes, obviously the voice of Kenny positivity is not me, but
no.
But yes, so thank you. Thank you for coming on again. And yeah. Rob, you're from the Brit Reg Roundtable. This is your first ever appearance on the show, I believe.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
Yeah, so welcome to the show. You get a 2019 Omakase Award ballot, unfortunately not 2018. But didn't quite get under the wire there. But
I'll live.
Yeah. Okay. How you been doing?
Well, I did fall asleep during the main event, so not perfectly, but I saw right up to the well, I remember seeing right up to the Tana high five flow through the table, and then after that, the next thing I remember is Go Ace hitting. So, gonna have to go back and rewatch that one.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, I guess you might not have a ton of thoughts on the main event then if you fall asleep during it. I figure for this, especially since we're all probably like, ooh, somebody got a lot of background noise going there. Especially since we got probably more, more energy at the beginning here, and we might peter out even further. We can start with the main events and work our way backwards. I mean, the undercard of the show really was not very interesting, honestly, with a few exceptions. But yeah, overall thoughts, I guess I would consider this slightly below average Wrestle Kingdom. The last three matches really saved it after a very uninteresting undercard. A couple things that I thought really underachieved. A couple of things that I thought just achieved basically, at the level I was expecting going in, but nothing that really blew me away. And then the main events about what I expected, except maybe Naito Jericho was a little better than I expected. So overall, I would call it like a decent show. Not one that blew me away, not one that I hated watching or anything, just kind of, especially based on the standards of Wrestle Kingdom, it was just an average Wrestle Kingdom, I would say. What do you think, Rob, overall thoughts?
I think that's an interesting point, because Wrestle Kingdom does have such a high bar to begin with. Like, looking back at my ratings here, and obviously I'm going to have to go back and watch the main event, but I'm assuming I'm going to end up over 4 stars in that. I've got at least 4 matches over the 4-star mark, and on any other show of the year, that's usually me coming out going, yeah, that was a great show. But by Wrestle Kingdom standards, that's kind of that just about saving it from being a big disappointment. You know, the strong ending meant that, you're not coming away from this going, this was a poor Wrestle Kingdom, but you're not blown away either. But that's just kind of the bar New Japan have set themselves with these January 4 shows.
Yeah, I totally agree. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, me too. I agree with Rob. I look back at my Wrestle Kingdom 12 ratings, and surprisingly enough, I had higher rated matches on this show than the last one, but it feels like I enjoyed last year's show more than this one. Like, this was like a great show, don't get me wrong, but it really was like a transitional show, and I felt like it's setting up a new era, and that's great and all, and I think it's something New Japan desperately needs. But even though I really loved most of the matches on the show, especially the last three, I still come away with, I like the show, but my feelings are not as high as they were in years past.
If anyone in the chat like agrees or disagrees, I'd love to hear that too, because we have a bunch of people on here live. If you really loved this show, I would love to hear it. Like, if you just think it was one of the best Wrestle Kingdoms ever, that'd be cool just to see different perspectives, or if you just hated the show. But yeah, I basically think we're all kind of in consensus. But I also agree with what you said too, that it's kind of a reset button in a lot of ways. Like, I like the booking and the results more than I like the actual like matches, because, it just feels like we're in a different reset here, based on, obviously, like someone just brought up in the chat, the AEW and Kushida rumors and stuff. It just feels like we're in a different era now, and there's going to be different, the entire, every title changed hands, first of all. I personally, the new slate of champions I'm much more into than the previous slate of champions, which probably isn't surprising if you know what my fandoms are. But yeah, I just think it's a very, like, I'm excited for what New Japan's coming out of here with. Like, there's a lot of fresh matches. I think they're going to be using a lot of new talent. I think I was listening to the Adam and Mike, the Big Audio Nightmare on the Figure Four Weekly the other week, where basically Adam was very adamant, like, even if he doesn't personally dislike the Elite, and I think I probably dislike the Elite more than some people listening to this, he really wanted to see them just move on because he just felt like it was time to, you know, they kind of done everything they can. I mean, the Young Bucks, even if you love the Young Bucks, like, what is left for the Young Bucks to do in New Japan, you know?
I agree. Just... I mean, I'm a big fan of the Young Bucks, and I voted them. I think I voted them as either my first or second tag team of the year in my Omakase Awards ballot. But
yeah,
I think it's definitely time for them to move on. Hit Cody like too. Cody, I mean, I know we'll get to him later.
There's just nothing left for Cody to do. He's not going to be IWGP Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, I still want Kenny to say it, but he's not really part. Yeah. He's not part of the Cody Young Bucks, like, for sure All Elite group. And then I hope Hangman stays, but I don't know. If depends really on if ROH can prevent New Japan from working with All Elite, and we're gonna learn more about that in the coming weeks for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I guess we'll know. I mean, it did feel like that this was it for them, but you never really know. I guess, so, until you hear anything about it, and if anyone's gonna stick around, maybe Kenny. But it didn't feel like Cody and the Bucks and, you know, Paige and all these dudes are really, it seems like they're long-term.
Especially since the Bucks, like, took the pin in the tag title match, which definitely makes me think that they're headed on their way out.
What do you think about all this, Rob? What do you think about, like, the big picture booking stuff coming out of the show?
I think at minimum, they've kind of covered themselves for if it does work out in the way that all Elite guys, they're out of here. Then they all took pins here. They're all put over the guys who are, you know, kind of, if not replacing them, going to be, who are still going to be there. And it could work out that, you know, talks are happening as we speak, I imagine, or have been happening over the last few days and will continue to happen over the next few. It could end up those guys are still around, but they've kind of covered themselves for in case they do, you know, move away, they decide to stick with a Ring of Honor relationship for whatever reason, or just don't want to team up with any. You know, the Dallas G1 show suggests that they're going to be going even harder in the US expansion, and as a result of that, it does mean All Elite's going to be even more competition directly.
I totally think that's a great point. I think, like, if All Elite might want a relationship with New Japan, but does New Japan want to have two American partners? Like, they want to do their own stuff in America. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a great point.
I think Harley Duncan in the chat, and I think someone made the point in our Slack chat too, is that if Kenny was leaving, they might have burned, like, kicking out of his finisher. So I think that's a good enough point for why Omega might stay. But I don't think it's like a definite, he's definitely staying. Like, he's absolutely going to be at the negotiation table the next month and try to get the highest price he can from all parties. And I definitely don't think it's 100% sure that he stays with the company like it was last year for me.
Yeah, and if anyone's going to be able to get the dual, like, New Japan All Elite deal, even if the two companies don't work together necessarily, maybe it would be Kenny. But I don't know. The whole thing with the rest of them just felt like it was like, okay, see you later on the way up the territory. For sure. I mean, Kushida too, obviously. Okay. So let's get into the matches. Like I said, we'll work our way down the card here since we might all be lacking energy by the end. So we'll start the main event, the IWGP heavyweight title, Kenny Omega and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Ended up going 39 minutes and 13 seconds, which would have guessed based on how much time was up in the show and also, you know, just how they were pacing early on. I would have guessed like 50 plus minutes. So it didn't go quite that long, but it did, you know, it was obviously a very long match, by far the longest thing on the show. I mean, everything else on the show was actually really short, which is interesting. Apparently, I was hearing that, like, the New Japan fans were complaining like on the way out the door about like the show feeling rushed. So it's just not, you know, that was George W. Bushy on Twitter, I think, tweeted that out. He was in the building. And, you know, I'm sure they are used to longer matches, so it doesn't really surprise me. But yeah, this obviously got a lot of time. I would say basically from the time when Tanahashi went through the table on the outside, that's when it really picked up. Like the first 20 minutes or so, really, I was not that into. Everything after that, everything after the table spot, I thought was pretty damn good. It had the usual complaints for Kenny for me. I thought his selling was very, very suspect. When he took the sling blade on the apron, that was probably the worst spot of all, when he just was like selling this by like coughing, but like not in a, like, I don't know how to describe it, just like not in a realistic or remotely plausible way, just like sitting up and like acting like a man who was like choking to death. It just didn't work at all. So that's the kind of thing that would drag it down for me. But you know, and the leg selling would, like, you know, he'd grab his leg and do his Kenny grimaces and then hit lots of perfect V triggers. So those would be my complaints. But obviously the athletic stuff and, you know, keeping up the pace of the match, he was very good. Tanahashi was amazing in this match. I just thought he was freaking incredible. And I would go 4.25 overall. So very good match. My usual Kenny complaints drag it down, but I still enjoyed it by the end. What did you think, Jack?
Well, I didn't go 5 stars. I went 4.75. I really like the story they told in this match. Like, you thought, I know you thought the beginning was, you know, slow and a little boring, and I get that. I felt like it established, like, the story they were trying to tell. I think every move felt to me like it had purpose. And then thanks to the English commentary, I sort of understood the story they were going for a little more. And then near the end, like, the action absolutely got insane, and they had a closing New Japan stretch, and I'm a big fan of those, as we'll talk about, I'm sure, more later. But like you said, the selling, you know, I defended him on Twitter a little bit with you during the main event, but I mean, I understand the complaints about his selling. He's not the best seller in the company. I don't think he's the worst. He definitely has his hangups. The coughing thing didn't get me as much as the V-triggers did with the knees. And that's really only my little complaint about the match and what prevents me from going 5. But other than that, I mean, obviously I'm disappointed Omega lost and all, because I'm a fan of Omega.
Really?
I know, I'm a fan of Omega. It's shocking. It's almost like you being a fan of Naito.
I know.
Anyways, but yeah, I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. It'll probably rank high in my match of the year. I don't know. It won't win. But I don't know. I enjoyed my time with it. People like it more than me, and that's fine. I don't really have much to say about it, though.
I saw a lot of 5s, so that's fine. I kind of figured.
I mean, I get it.
It felt like the kind of match that was going to get a lot of 5s from people. I just thought that the first 20 minutes were just too boring.
Used to it at this point with the New Japan main events, I feel like, so that I don't mind them as much as I used to.
I know you fell asleep, Rob, but do you have any thoughts on it anyway from what you saw?
I feel like I may end up, obviously, like, a lot will depend, because obviously the finish and the closing stretches, I think most would probably say the most important part of a match. So not having seen that, obviously a lot's up in the air, but I feel I'm probably somewhere in the middle between the two of you. It wasn't, like, from what I saw of it.
A second. If you're in the middle of two of us, you have to be a 4.5. Exactly.
from what I saw of it, like, I wasn't thinking it was like, I will highly doubt that this will end up as like something in my top 10 by year end, unless the finishing stretch was absolutely magnificent. Because I do kind of agree with John, like, it did take a while to get going, and while it was, I never felt it was purposeless, which is a complaint I can have with a lot of Omega's longer matches. It also wasn't incredibly engaging towards the beginning, and when you're having a match that long, like, I don't fall asleep during matches that are incredibly gripping, you know. Tiredness or not. So There are a few absolutely amazing spots, like when Omega got his knees up, just the timing on that was incredibly impressive. Like, you see that spot all the time, knees up off a high fly foe, but just the way he left that to the very, very last second was incredible. Tanahashi's high fly flow off the top through the table was an incredible spot. There are things from this match that I will remember, you know, 5-10 years from now. But in the moment, it didn't grab me as like the absolutely amazing special match that you do often get recently with these Wrestle Kingdom, if not always the main event. I think that's probably for me the big difference between this Wrestle Kingdom and previous Wrestle Kingdoms is, while it's probably had a similar amount of great matches, there's no, for me anyway, one match where I'm like, yeah, that's clear fire match of the year contender, will take a hell of a beating to displace my number one for the whole rest of the year. I didn't really think we got that this year.
We came close with one, I think. But yeah, I don't. It's going to be, it's tough when it wasn't five. There probably will be something that beats it. But yeah, the main event, I mean, to me, it was very similar to Okada Naito last year, which, you know, the booking issues with the booking aside, I thought that again took a long time to get going. And by the time it got going, you know, it wasn't always like, you know, the ending felt very abrupt and all that kind of stuff. But Okada Naito last year, I would have put like slightly above. I put that 4.5. So
yeah, I agree with you actually on that one.
It's like a little bit worse, but not by.
When it was going on, I certainly felt like it felt a lot like, I mean, it was a stereotypical New Japan main event where it slow builds and then goes to a rampant finishing stretch. And yeah, so yeah, I could certainly see why you would compare it to Okada Naito. And we don't need to get into the booking decisions of that match.
Yeah, it's fine. It's beyond the scope of this podcast. But yeah, so that was the main event. The semi-main Naito and Jericho, I absolutely loved. That was my blowaway match of the show. This I went end up going 4.75 on it. So just below that kind of like surefire match of the year level. You know, if it's five, then, you know, it's pretty much guaranteed to be like a top 3 or 4 finish, because I rarely have more than that many 5-star matches in a year. But 4.75, it still has a decent chance to make the top 10 at the end of the year. So I guess that's my big match of the year type match from the show. Yeah, I just thought this was incredible. I mean, I had high expectations going in, you know, because I really loved the Dominion match. I believe I went 4.5 on it. But if anything, they exceeded my expectations, and they, like, you know, it was a very different match than I thought it would be going in. I thought they were going to go more in the route of Omega Jericho from last year, where, you know, it being no DQ meant they just went totally, like, WWE style hardcore match or WWE style like brawl with it, where like they're just using plunder nonstop and, you know, really killing each other. Here, I mean, they obviously, the weapons played into it with a few key spots, especially the kendo stick stuff that ended up really paying off at the end. But for the most part, it was just like a regular match that happened to have a few weapon spots and, you know, had a brawl feel to it. But it was, otherwise, it was very, you know, it was a lot more in the confines of a more traditional New Japan match than I expected. And Jericho,
I mean, for sure.
What'd you say? Sorry.
It had a nice balance. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not too far. Cause like Omega Jericho last year, I know people are going to, I love that stuff. That was like too far in the, like the WWE brawl, you know, area for me. This was like right in like a good happy zone. And Jericho, you know, I'm going to, obviously everybody knows I'm going to talk a lot about Naito and how great he was, but Jericho was great too. I mean, he more than held up his end, you know, despite looking very flappy, but you know, he was great here. Great in his role. You know, people were asking after the show if it was like his best. I saw the Voice of Wrestling account was asking if it was his best match ever. And it might've been, I mean, I was trying hard to think of something better. I mean, it's very, very difficult. But yeah, maybe not his best individual performance, but like as far as like the best match he's ever in, I think it'd probably be up there. But yeah, Naito was obviously incredible here. I mean, just his selling and the bumping. He takes that drop kick, that springboard drop kick on the apron, and just like lands on the back of his neck, and then he takes that DDT on that table and like just come straight down and like leaves like an indent in the table, according to Kevin Kelly on the English commentary. I mean, just incredible. Like Naito quite literally was just like dying to get that match over, and the crowd was going nuts. So he basically succeeded. But yeah, I mean, I could, you know, rave about this match forever. I just thought, you know, Jericho, the whole story of the feud was Jericho and the weapons and, you know, getting one over on Naito with the chair and the kendo stick and stuff. So when he beat the shit out of Naito with the kendo stick early, but then Naito getting the kendo stick to break the walls and, you know, getting like some manner of revenge on Jericho with the DDT on the chairs and stuff. That was really cool. And he just like started tossing chairs around like he was Brock Lesnar or something. That was fucking awesome. And then at the very end, he pays him back for the belt shot, you know, at Dominion, tosses that dumbbell aside that he still doesn't really, although I've heard he was a little nicer to it in the post-match, but I just love that he just tosses it down like a piece of crap and then hits him with a Destino. So yeah, 4 3/4, I thought that was fucking awesome. I thought Naito saved the show, really, but, and Jericho helped a lot too, obviously. What'd you think of this one, Robin?
I'm not quite as high on it as you, but yeah, this was probably match the night of the matches I saw all of, definitely. As you said, like that they did strike a really nice balance, and I think I'm not sure, and I love Naito, and Naito is my favorite wrestler, but I'm not sure if they had gone the full plunder route that Naito would have been as well suited to do that as Omega was the previous year. So striking that balance really played to Naito's strengths. They kind of lean more on the dramaticism rather than just the pure hardcore like insanity that was the Omega Jericho match. And I enjoyed both of them a lot, probably to similar levels actually, but they're very different matches despite kind of on paper it looking like they might be quite similar leading into them. I'm not sure if it's even a complaint, but the one thing that probably stopped it being like a real match of the year contender level match for me was kind of the closing stretch being, instead of like, it was more definitive than exciting in a way, and I don't think that's really much of a criticism for it, because I think that's what it needed to be. It needed to be Naito, you know, Naito is, touch wood, going to be the champion of the company about a year from now, and he is, you know, hopefully for the next few years going to be one of the main stars, and Jericho is a guy in his 50s or late 40s or whatever, who's coming in with his dad bod. You don't really want Naito to be put like on a par. You want him to definitively put Jericho away, and that's what they did. But I didn't find like the finish particularly, like, it wasn't necessarily what I want from like my match of the year contenders, even though it was probably the right finish, if that makes sense.
Sure. And we should mention too, since you talk about Naito, you know, showing these a cutter above, he got to kick out of the low blow and then code breaker that put him away at Dominion, which I thought was a cool little touch.
Yeah, that was very nice.
I just want to point something out quick. I know I'll get to my thoughts in a second, but this is a no DQ match. And before Jericho hit his low ball, he shoved the ref into the ropes. What are you hiding?
He really respects Red Shoe's opinion of him, and he doesn't want him to say it. It's not illegal. He's not worried about being DQ'd. He just doesn't want Red Shoes to think less of him. He already tried to kill his son last year, so he's worked all year long to repair that relationship. I don't know. That's my headcanon. People are doing headcanons involving Naito today. So
yeah, it didn't bother me at all. I guess I'll get into my thoughts of the match. It was my match
was
of the night.
It was just fucking funny.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, it was my match of the night. I also went 4 3/4. I like good brawls that feel like they have purpose. And like Omega Tanahashi in the main event, it felt like these two dudes legitimately hated each other. You know, Jericho dropped Naito on his head about 50 times Always appreciate that. Naito really, really sold Jericho's attacks well, and I think that got the match over the hump for me. And they just did a lot of stuff in this match that just felt clever. Like, I liked how Jericho grabbed the camera and then did the middle finger thing like he did last year. That made me pop last year. It made me pop again. I like the baseball kendo stick thing that Naito did. That was smart. And then for the rest of it, I just think it was cool. Like the fake dive spot at the beginning, I thought that was very clever. Sort of the show Naito's anger and like he's fed up with Jericho. Really, this match was just a lot of neat story bits that all added up along with a violent brawl to really just make a very complete, excellent pro wrestling match.
And we had Scott Wilcox in the chat just say maybe it was just heel instinct, which is what maybe it's like, yeah, correct. The heel's like, I'm going to hit the low blow, so I'm just pushing the ref out of the way. But yeah, maybe that was what it was. But yeah, awesome match. Non-ironically, like, I don't know, save the show maybe a little strong because the last match was also very good, just not quite on this level. But it definitely made the show feel like a lot more worthwhile as far as like staying up all night to watch it. So
yeah, this is the first show on it, or before you go on, this is the first match on the show, like even above Okada White, where I felt like it was a big match worthy of Wrestle Kingdom. And I loved Okada White, as we'll get onto, but like this felt like a big match, and I always like big match feel.
So Okada White, Jay White defeating Okada in 15-18, a lot shorter than most of Okada's Wrestle Kingdom matches. This was a really interesting one where it just, first of all, Okada comes out with the old Rainmaker theme, the old theme song. So no more the cutoff on the remix. He comes out with the blonde hair, no more red hair. He comes out with, you know, the Rainmaker jacket and the pose, and he even had the short tights back, which people on Twitter went fucking nuts for. So he's got the whole deal back in Rainmaker Okada mode, no more broken little kazoo, whatever you want to call it. And he loses pretty clean as a whistle, with the Blade Runner, which, you know, that made it. I mean, that was it, basically. That made that, you know, they totally fooled you out. Like, I think I even tweeted when Okada came out, like, oh, he has the full Rainmaker ensemble back. He's winning. And, you know, the story just was that, like, he thought he was going to win with this. He thought he was going to win with, you know, by doing this, by going into the old Okada mode, and just wasn't enough. He still lost, and it didn't come by cheating. It didn't come by Jay White being a little, you know, low blow or chair shot or whatever, which they tried to do that earlier with. It looked like, you know, White got bumped into Gato, and that's it. He just hit his move, and he won. So that was a very, very ballsy finish, very strong finish, you know, made me think that the Okada story, like the idea of him getting back to where he was, is going to go on a lot longer, and this is why now I'm feeling Okada. If Okada Naito is going to be the match next year, I think Okada will like have to go through this still for a while. And I don't think he's going to get back the title. I think he's going to win the G1. But either way, I think, you know, the whole Okada getting back to the top thing will take a while longer, which is good. I think it, you know, as the match was going on, I almost felt like, okay, it's weird that he's just back in the old Rainmaker mode, and now he's just going to win after, like, all he really did was, you know, get beat up by Jay White for 4 months, and it was a trick. It was like, well, he is back in the old Rainmaker mode, but he still sucks. He still lost. So I thought that was a good little touch. And Jay White got to beat, you know, this old Rainmaker Okada, which is really cool. But, yeah, I mean, I went 4 flat on this. It didn't blow me away. The crowd was super into it, though. Just by the end of it, you know, I was feeling a little bit lower, but by the last like few sequences really got me, and I really enjoyed it by the end. So this was like the first match on the show that broke up a streak of, you know, crap and disappointing. So this, maybe you could say this saved the show. I don't know. What do you think, Jack, of Okada and White?
I really, really like this match. Like, I went 4.5 on it. It wasn't like the best in-ring work rate match, but it just felt like the story made so much sense. And when Okada came out with the old Rainmaker theme, and he took his pants off to a massive pop. That was my favorite moment of the show. And then just to have them fuck with us like that, to have Jay White win, like, that just felt like perfect. Jay White's a made man after this show. I mean, he pinned Okada clean in the middle of the ring at Wrestle Kingdom. You can't get a bigger rub much more than that. But for the match itself, it just had a lot of interesting story stuff. It had an Okada closing stretch again, which those are always fun. Jay White really felt like he's finally, like, figured out his Switchblade character. When I first came on this podcast in July, like, I was still unsure about Jay White. But now I am all in on Jay White. No pun intended. No pun. He's not going to All Elite. But he's just really good at being a heel now. And I think a good heel is something that could desperately benefit New Japan. Despite Kenny's efforts to be a heel, Jay White's much better at it. And I think that him in this current character role could easily be a top guy in New Japan for many years to come.
Rob, what do you think?
This was a match where, like, I thought it was masterfully booked, as you guys have kind of already laid out, with the kind of bait and switch of the whole, the Rainmaker's back. Of course he's going to win. Oh, no, he just loses clean to the heel who haven't been able to win clean yet.
The crowd reaction to that, too, was incredible.
Right. They had the crowd eating out the palm of their hands. Like, it was an interesting crowd tonight, in that I thought they were a lot quieter for quite a lot of the matches than I expected. Not that they were, like, unfairly quiet, because as we're kind of going to get onto, a lot of the undercard didn't entirely deliver. And then it was also weird later in the show when, like, Kenny came out to almost no reaction. But this match, they were all in on. Again, no pun intended. But I don't know. It just didn't really hook me as a match. Like, I can understand and freely say that they did all the right things and everything they did makes sense and was the right move and massively booked. But sometimes a match just doesn't hook you, and that's kind of where I was with this one. You know, I didn't hate it. I could, you know, see that the work was good. But you know, when a match doesn't hook you, you can't really say it's great, you know?
Yeah. Totally.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
And I want to double back too, because you mentioned, we should have mentioned that during the Kenny thing. The lack of pop for him really was really weird. I will say, even as a Kenny disliker or whatever you want to say, it is fair to point out that, like, it was probably just like the crowd didn't know how to react to this weird, like, fucking video game theme song he came out to.
Yeah, they used the video that Kenny, he seemed very upset on Twitter that, when he's like, this will not be used on any New Japan.
Well, they didn't play it, though. I mean, I think he wanted to play the whole fucking video. Right, but I think they wanted him, he thought they were going to play this whole fucking 6-minute thing, like, before, like, for the everybody, like they did with his video with Ibushi that ripped off the Avengers at Dominion. Like, I think he thought they were going to play it, like, for the live crowd and the people at home, like, the whole thing. It was just, like, they played, like, a clip of it when he came out, and I guess it might have kept going on in the background while he came out, but, like, it wasn't like they were playing it for everybody.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It still surprised me that they showed it at all, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
He seemed pretty clear when he said, this will not be on any New Japan properties at all. Like,
yeah.
I thought the music
was... So the music is from that Undertale game,
yeah.
But Undertale is, you know, I don't really think it's that popular in Japan, although we have a person on the chat, buddy, I don't know how to say your name, I'm sorry, but it says Hikaru Shida pop for Undertale, that's all that matters. And so if Hikaru Shida likes it, I'm going to have to rethink my opinion here, because Hikaru Shida rules.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I never played Undertale. I had no idea the song was even from Undertale until...
No, I've never played somebody, it either. I'm just aware of its existence.
Yeah, I was aware of existence too, but I really didn't know anything about it. But anyway, so... Oh, Ibushi's also an Undertale mark, Emilio Hernandez says, so there you go. But yeah, so like, this was... The Omega reaction was weird, like you're saying, the lack of reaction sometimes was a little weird. I mean, this crowd ended up being a little smaller than I think people were predicting. It came in about 3,000 more than last year, But last year's crowd to me was way louder than this crowd. I don't know what it was. Maybe just the last year's show was a lot better, you know, that people were more into it. But like, I don't know. I'd love to hear, like, maybe if Joel's still here, if he can, because I think he went to both, if he could say like how he thought the live crowd was in the building. Because on TV, to me, like, the live crowd was just so much louder last year than this year.
Yeah, I agree. Years, really. When Tanahashi won, I don't know if I didn't have my TV turned up loud enough, but I didn't hear that much of a pop. But then I asked Joel, like, hey, was there a big pop? And he's like, oh yeah, that was a massive pop. So I don't know. The dome is not good for sound, but
yeah, I heard a pop when he won, but it probably wasn't as big as I was expecting.
Like, I was expecting like a massive pop, considering like the crowd clearly was pretty much behind Tanahashi. So I was expecting a bigger pop, but if it came across better in the building, that's great. Sometimes it's hard to gauge a crowd's reaction.
Yeah, so Joel. So Joel does agree, quieter overall than last year. So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, 3,000
more people, but they didn't hit like the kind of like 40K plus that some people were predicting. We'll see next year. I mean, we haven't gotten into it at all yet, but they're going to run two dome gates next year, yeah, which is crazy. But they're going to run the Saturday and the Sunday, the 4th and the 5th. So we'll see what kind of matches they have with that. What kind of, you know, what numbers they're able to draw with two dome dates. It's just nuts.
What was interesting from what I've seen from what a lot of the people live were tweeting out was that they were saying that the main event was somewhat close to a 50-50 split in chance, and that's bizarre because on TV it did not sound like that at all.
Yeah, I saw those tweets too, and that just shocked me. I heard nothing
But wait a second. Here's what I would say for that. A lot of Western fans were like sitting together in like Western fan sections, so it would not shock me if like the Western fan sections were much more pro Omega than the crowd as a whole. You know,
yeah,
that's what I would assume. But I mean, Kenny has a Japanese fan.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. Like, he's a proven draw, pretty much in Tokyo's, and that's where they held the show. But yeah, I mean, the crowd was absolutely way more Tanahashi from what I heard than. I don't think it was 50-50, but if people there, it really depends. I don't really know.
the junior title match, the Taiji Sumori and Kushida. This was a very interesting finish, just like the Jay White Okada match. You know, this felt like it only went 11 minutes and 17 seconds. Ishimori won relatively cleanly, or not relatively cleanly, completely cleanly, just as definitively as you can get here. And it very much felt like a, you know, have fucking fun in NXT, buddy, type of finish. Like a, you know, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out finish. But there you go. What did you think of this match? I mean, I think I went like 3 stars on it. I don't know. I mean, it was just kind of there.
I thought this was... I thought this was the most disappointing match of the whole card. I didn't think it was the worst match of the card, but in terms of matches going in, I was kind of looking at like the last 4-match stretch to be similar to kind of what we got last year, in that it would be great match, great match, great match, great match. And this was just a nothing match. It was good in that it really solidified Taiji as a killer, basically. He took the majority of the match and then just pinned him clean and didn't really sell that much for Kushida. But in terms of match quality, it was very much just a match, and that's not really what we've come to expect from the junior title matches in recent years at Wrestle Kingdom, but that's kind of what we got. It did very much feel like a write-off for Kushida.
Yeah, what do you think, Jack?
I did not like this at all, and if it worked for another match on the show, this would absolutely be my least favorite match of the show. I was in the middle of watching this, and I'm wondering, is this going to get good? And then it didn't get good.
Yeah, then it ended.
I was just so surprised because I thought for sure these two dudes would kill it. I mean, maybe I'm just sour on Kushida or something, but this just did not land at all, and I thought it was incredibly fine.
It was aggressively okay.
Yes, it was aggressively okay. I guess I just expected so much more out of this match, and then it just didn't deliver, and it was easily the most disappointing match on the show for me. There's no doubt about that.
But yeah, I mean, like, it just basically, yeah, TJ Falk on the chat agrees, you know, basically the moment it started picking up to me too, like I was like, maybe like 3 seconds before the finish, it was like, oh, maybe it's going to get good now. And they hit the move and I just pinned him. It's like, okay. So like I said, that felt like a, you know, you want to go to NXT, buddy? Put him over 11 minutes, 1, 2, 3, no kickouts, just fucking get out of here.
So. Yeah, if there's any doubt that Kushida was probably going, I think he's definitely going to WWE after that match. Also, can we talk about the entrance? That was
We should talk about the entrance.
That was weird.
So little baby Kushida had a 3D printed mask. And like people on Twitter were horrified. I think it was I shouldn't take this bit without knowing who I'm crediting. So let me think about this for a second. Somebody on Twitter. I'm sorry. If you probably listen to me anyway, so you can listen to my stupid show. You can tell me later who it was. Who basically said, like, the moment the baby Kushida showed up, I had like WWE had broken my brain so bad. I thought they were gonna bury him on the way out by having Taiji beat up like a tiny Kushida, and that's exactly where my mind went to. I was like, oh, he's gonna kick this tiny Kushida's ass to humiliate him, and then the real Kushida will run out and then lose. But no, it was just set up for Doc Brown Taguchi to come out and bring Ashley, there we go, Ashley Nova just took credit for it. Thanks, Ashley. Didn't even think you'd be the person would be listening live, but that's very helpful. So yeah, so Ashley, that's who came up with that one. But yeah, so like it was really bizarre. And then he like hit a button, and I don't remember the part of Back to the Future where they had like aging in the middle of the, but I guess, you know, time, I guess, was just the general theme. But yeah, it was really weird.
It was really a horrifying mask that was too accurate, and it was weird.
It was super fucking weird. It's like one of those. It's like how CGI, when like CGI looks too much like humans, your like natural reaction as a human is to want to kill it. Like that's. I think that was everyone on Twitter's reaction to the fucking Kushida mask. It was like kill it with fire. But yeah, that is the most memorable thing about the match.
It's weird that. It's fairly likely that that's going to be Kushida's last big match ever in New Japan. And that's what we're going to remember Kushida for. Like, that's just going to be burned into all of our collective minds.
So I mean, when you consider where he's going, it might be his last big match ever.
Look, if people really liked watching Kushida wrestle, he's signing with the wrong company, because you're going to see him like once every 6 weeks, probably, if that. But, in like a 6 minute match, probably.
205 Live.
No, NXT. 205 Live, you might see him like one. 205 Live, you might see him once a month. NXT, NXT, you're gonna see him like once every 6 weeks. If he's not in the Largo loop. U.S. Heavyweight Title. That's the next match. I swear to God, when I saw this match was 9 minutes and 2 seconds, I like my brain exploded. Like if you told me guess how long this match was, I would have guessed like 35 minutes, or maybe maybe that's a little exaggerated, but I would have guessed at least like, I don't know, 16 or something. Cause like that fucking match just felt like it went on forever. It really, really, really sucked. Match.
It was one of those matches. I came out of it thinking this is like a 15 minute match that felt like a 30 minute match. But no, it was a 9 minute match that somehow felt like a 30 minute match. And I think it was made to feel longer by that they went straight to the bullshit. They had no pretense of like any you know, actually having a decent match at all. They just went straight to the Brandi shit with her hitting some of the worst punch. Like, I don't know if you can even call them punches. Like, the spear looked vaguely okay, but then, like, she was like a good foot away when she was meant to be doing the ground and pound. It was impressively bad.
Brandi Rhodes is not a shooter.
It's the kind of thing, you know, she's definitely not. It's the kind of thing you do not just don't expect to see in New Japan. Like, that's how bad it was. And, you know, not that New Japan's perfect or anything, but there's like a certain standard, you know, of like in-ring style and like quality. And like this did not meet it in any fucking universe. Like, this was a bad WWE match. That's what this was. I mean, this was
we were like one Jinder Mahal hands away from this. Just
like Jinder Mahal on an episode of Raw. That's what this was. So, like, the only highlight really was Cody doing like the fastest fake knee injury of all time. At the very that was really funny.
Screamed of our matches got cut on time, so we're going to do all the same spots, but we're just going to rush straight to them and finish them immediately.
It started
like 10 seconds into the match, and it was the spot was finished 15 seconds into the match. It was amazing.
I also liked how Cody and Brandi here came out in the fucking Jaguars colors, because you know, I guess they weren't allowed to wear like explicit all lead stuff, so they're like, we're the Jaguars. But like, as far as I know, I'm not a big football fan, but the Jaguars are fucking terrible.
Jaguars like, fan here. Yes, very bad.
I didn't know that was your team. Wow. What is your record? Well, 5-11,
I believe. Yes. They're my secondary team, but I watched the majority of the games. Yeah, they're not good.
I saw someone tweet at 5-11. So it is really funny that like 15 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, you'll be able to look back at Wrestle Kingdom 13 and be like, yeah, so remember the time that Cody Rhodes and his wife were wearing like the uniform colors of a team that was like 5-11 in fucking American football because they had to reference their new fucking company somehow. It's the only way New Japan will let them do it. That's the kind of thing that's going to be funny in like 10 years. So it's already funny, but
this was just so bad.
The match itself did not make me laugh. The match itself made me like want to scream, but just felt like it was just taking forever. But what are you going to do? I guess juice, it was such a waste of juice. Cause I tweeted it. I saw this guy have multiple 4-star matches in the G1 last year. Like he had one of my favorite matches of the year. Like that was super underrated with Naito in the G1. And it's like, what? He's just doing this fucking WWE horse shit. He does not need to be doing, but anyway,
he had a very good angry look on his face at the end of this match that really summed up, I'm sure, a lot of people's thoughts.
This match over-delivered. Sorry.
It over-delivered what? Like, comedy? Yeah. I don't know.
Did Rob's mic die now?
I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe. Who knows? Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you.
Okay, we're all good. Live radio, yeah, this match under-delivered to the same degree that Cody's match last year over-delivered. So overall, we balanced out to what we kind of expected to get, but this year was just us paying for the surprisingly great match with Ibushi last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, too. Like, people were pointing that on Twitter, and I totally forgot. Like, I gave that match a 4.25 last year. This match, I gave a 0.25 star. So it's a little bit of a drop off there for Mr. Cody Rhodes. But yeah, this fucking sucked. I don't know what else we can say about it. Tag title match, the heavyweight tag titles. This is like, again, aggressively fine. Just a 10-minute tag team title match. I mean, the stuff with the Young Bucks and Evil and Sonata was pretty okay. G.O.D. would come in and just kind of do nothing. And, you know, Evil and Sonata won, which is cool. I don't really have a lot to say about this. I don't know if either of you do, but
nope.
It was fine.
It was fine. The Young Bucks did some flips.
Jada was a ghost.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want to talk about. What the fuck?
Jada was a ghost.
Oh, Matt Jackson sold his back some more. He's really got to get that checked out.
Got It's been a fucking year and we're still doing this match.
Literally a year.
Like, I get it. Back injuries with you for your whole life, but isn't this a work? Like, can't you just stop selling your fucking back? I don't...
He's really got to get it checked out. It's really like all he has to...
It's going to be like AEW is going to be like 10 years, going on for 10 years, and Mad Max will still be selling his fucking back. But sure. I don't know, Rob, do you have anything at all to say about this match?
God came out dressed as Bionicle, so that was cool. But
I had no clue what that was, but.
I thought he was Iron Man. That's all I know.
Apparently, Joel Abraham says Evil's canceled for cultural appropriation. I have no idea what he's even talking about. What was he culturally appropriating?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, Joel, you got to explain that one. I don't even remember. I'm so fucking tired. All right. The British title match. This would be the other match that delivered about, like, pretty much the only thing on the undercard before the main events that delivered to the level I expected. You know, they only went 11 and a half minutes, but I still went 4 1/4 on it. I just thought it was, besides some awkwardness on a reversal spot towards the end, you know, I just thought it was another really great Zack and Ishii match. Nothing you haven't seen before if you saw their matches in the past, but still another really good one. You know, I mean, that's exactly the kind of, especially if they're sitting through, like, you know, stuff that I'm not really as into. It was just great to have a match that was just very straightforward and very, very pure resu, even though obviously Zach did his, you know, wacky submissions. A lot of the match was like striking. A lot of the match was, Ishii fighting through the pain to hit his lariats and stuff and throwing suplexes, Saito suplexes. So very much like the kind of like Japanese wrestling match I want to see. Obviously then with Zach's flavor mixed in. But yeah, I thought this was really good. What do you think, Rob?
Well, as he is now my designated champion, being the new champion of all the British, I was very, very pleased with this match. I thought they had some really nice touches in that they brought Andy Quilden over to present the title afterwards. They had Chris Roberts there as the ref. It felt, if this is in the spot of like the Ring of Honor title match from previous years, and I thought it blew away all of them.
Yeah. I mean, if people don't like Sabre or whatever, like I promise you, if you weren't around for the years of fucking Jay Lethal or Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly having a 10-minute match no one in the entire Tokyo Dome could possibly care about. This was a massive improvement.
And better than that, I thought they did a really good job of having like a familiarity-based match that would have been very easy for them not to have, simply because, you know, it was kind of a showcase-type deal, and it would have, because these are two New Japan guys, it would have been very easy for them to just go out and have like the base match that they would have together instead of the familiarity based match, because the matches that they previously had together were for the most part in RevPro. I think they did have a G1 match as well. But they had a lot of counters here. They really worked as if it was the conclusion to their story rather than just a match between them. As someone who follows RevPro, I thought this was an excellent job of kind of showcasing what they have to offer.
It definitely felt like, you know, I was wondering that, if it felt like a RevPro type match, because it did feel like a distinct thing, at least from, you know, like the Ring of Honor stuff. Ring of Honor's title matches did not feel like distinct parts, like this part of Ring of Honor on the New Japan show. It just felt like two white guys no one cared about having a stupid match.
I mean, so, isn't that Ring of Honor, though?
That basically is Ring of Honor, I guess. Jack, what'd you think?
Oh, I really like this match. I saw a couple people on Twitter saying it was similar to the matches they had at, I believe it was WrestleCon Super Show or one of the Rev Pro shows in WrestleMania weekend, and another match they had in the summer. I didn't see those, so this is the first time I've seen these two guys wrestle, I believe. And I was a really big fan of it. I'm a big fan of both the guys. I thought the way that Sabre worked Ishii's arms and the ending submission where I don't even know what he did. like bent both of his arms back. Like that was just disgusting, but it ruled. It really went. It was just a great 11-minute undercard match. Get in, get out, and just they did what they needed to do.
Yeah, totally agree. Junior tag title match, again, aggressively fine. Only got 7 minutes. I think if it got like another five, even, it probably would have, you know, really maybe had a chance to do a lot, you know, blow the house down a little more. But felt very rushed. It was totally fine. Bushi and Shingo won, which I'm happy about. Not really a lot else to say about it. Anything you guys want to add?
Yeah, this was just a Shingo showcase, basically. And, you know, to be fair, it works in that he was very over in the dome. He was, through most of the undercard, he was probably the guy who was most over. But it was a bit weird in that the length of the Suzuki Gun team's title reign ended with such kind of a nothing match. That was a bit odd, but... you know, it's the junior tag titles. The booker doesn't really care about them that much, so neither should we, I guess.
What do you
think? Yeah, I don't have much to say either. Shingo rocks, and I'm glad he's got the shine in this match, and
yeah,
hopefully
Shingo,
he'll be in much higher spots in the future.
Shingo is fucking awesome here, and I think the Ryugoku being the home for Best of Super Junior this year, which is incredible, and then we can get into that a little bit when we talk about the announcements. But like, I think that he could very easily end up main eventing in the Best of Super Junior final there. Would not surprise me at all. Yeah. And I think that would go a long way towards helping that show do well. But yeah, I mean, he was awesome here. That he really got a chance to shine. It was really cool just seeing, you know, just seeing him in that spot. But yeah, so that's exactly what I was thinking. Ketelos, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Shingo versus Hiromu in Sumo Hall is exactly what I was thinking, actually, if Hiromu was able to come back in time. But yeah, you know, I thought this was a pretty good match. You know, I'm happy to see Shingo and Bushi get the belts. Big moment for Bushi, who's wanted these junior tag belts for like 5 years or something. Like he's just wanted those things forever. You know, after years after he called him a Gaijin piss break, you know, here he is in an all native roster member three-way for the belts. So he ends up winning them. The opener, the never open weight title, Will Ospreay defeating Kota Ibushi in 18-13. This one probably will be the most divisive. I was just very, very disappointed by it. I just didn't really get into it at all. You know, the first half just was very much like what I thought was going to be the worst case scenario for this, which just felt like a gymnastics meet and just didn't click with me at all. You know, once you got past that point, it did get a lot better, but I was not into it until, you know, the second half of the match, really. The second half saved it enough to get me like 3.5. But yeah, I mean, very disappointing, you know, after all the big hype. I just didn't think it came close. What do you think, Jack, I guess?
Like you said, this is really a match of two different things. Like, they did the gymnastics flippy stuff, which I liked. I thought it was pretty fun. And then about halfway through, they just decided that they would bloody the crap out of each other and try to drop each other on each other's heads as much as they could. And that part of the match was certainly more enjoyable for me than the first half. I think I ended up around 4.25 on this one. I thought it was a pretty good match. They did well with the spot and time they were given, I think. It felt
Wait a second. Now, to me, a pretty good match is 3.5. Not 4.25.
I mean, ratings are dynamic. They change.
Okay.
What was I saying? It felt like the first match of a trilogy to me. They're definitely going to go back to this in the future. Also, Kota Ibushi, he's probably not hurt.
I do want to say, I was saving that to after I got your opinions. But yeah, Kota, I don't think that injury was legit. There's a couple reasons why I don't think so. First of all, that he went up so easy for the Storm Rider, whatever that thing is called, which is not an easy move to go up for, really. And second of all, the actual doctor was not out there. apparently. It was like the trainer, but not the doctor, which, you know, people were saying if he was really legitimately like seriously hurt, the real doctor would have been out there. And third of all, if he was seriously hurt, they rolled him like nothing onto that stretcher. So if he was seriously hurt, they need better medical care. But I think it was an angle to get him, you know, not out there for the main event. That's what I think. But, you know, because they didn't want him in Kenny's corner, and they just, I guess they thought it would, muddle up the whole thing of Kenny as being the heel or something. But that's my thing with that. I think it was probably an angle. I mean, maybe it'll come out that it wasn't. But yeah, what do you think about this, Rob?
Yeah, you go back and like look at the GIF from one of the many GIF accounts from like the decapitator elbow, which, you know, is what they were trying to sell as the thing that injures Ibushi. You can watch that, and that doesn't even make contact, or if it does, it flicks one of his hairs. So, you know, that's not causing it. Ibushi's nose did kind of get busted up early. I think it was bit of a dodgy shove into the turnbuckle
post. Yeah, Will shoved him way too hard, basically. Like, he was supposed to shove him, you know, kind of hard, and he just, like, really, like, pushed into it, and his nose ended up, like, colliding with the turn. But I don't think he wouldn't put him on a stretcher for that, though.
No, just a broken nose. And he was, like, doing several moves after that. It looked very clearly like an angle to me, but I'm sure that will all come out anyway. But I've said this before for other matches already in this call, but I think I'm kind of in the middle of the two of you on the match. I thought the opening, like, it, I think what they kind of tried to do was show like a progression in that the first half would be like the stereotypical Flippy Jr. match, and then show Ospreay's progression by then having a far more of a heavyweight style in the second half. But I'm not sure it really completely landed, simply because the Flippy Jr. section just wasn't that good, because it had like the athleticism was very impressive, but there was just no flow to it at all. It was kind of, like you said, very much trading moves. I'll do this impressive flippy thing now. Now it's your turn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then when they did reach the point where they kind of turned into heavyweight mode and just started battering each other, I thought that was so excellent. I couldn't come away from this match going any lower than 4 stars, and that's kind of where I ended up. I just thought the second half of this match was excellent. And if this does end up being like the first part of a rivalry, and they can replicate the second half of this match for a full match, then we're in for something really special.
Yeah, I agree. I think they probably do have a much better match in them. So I think part of it was like just holding back, and, you know, we're in the opener and that kind of thing. But I think people were expecting a little bit better. But yeah, this to me was the first big disappointment. And then the other big disappointment of the undercard was nothing. Nothing like this under delivered, and then nothing over delivered. So like, that's a bad combination. But again, the three main events by the end did pretty much save the show from being any kind of disaster. The never openweight gauntlet, that was just a fucking thing. I don't even know what we'd even say about that, other than Taguchi, Makabe, Nana won. I didn't think it was any kind of replacement for the Rambo. I missed the Rambo. That's about all I have to say about it.
I bet you was very sad that he didn't get flown over.
I miss Scott Flash Norton.
I miss Masahito Kakihara.
It's just name. This is name Rambo participants. I don't know, Rob.
Finley got 2 pins, so that's perhaps something to look out for, but probably not. The only other thing was that I actually found quite amusing was that I think Chase Owens and the Elite guys kind of shot an angle. But it felt like they were kind of doing it for themselves, and the New Japan cameras just didn't show it. They just cut straight to the best friends making their entrance. They were like, "No, you don't get to cut an angle on our show without our permission. That's not happening." So you just had Kevin Kelly like talking about the angle that was playing out, and you not seeing it at all. That was quite amusing.
I mean, I guess they're trying to show that like the Elite is splitting up or something, but I don't know. Like you're saying, maybe it's just something they did, but like Chase and Yujiro need to do something. I guess they might just go back to the Bullet Club, but
They don't really feel like they fit there, but they don't fit anywhere else either. So yeah. It's weird.
But yeah, so that was Wrestle Kingdom. Pretty good show. You know, definitely saved by the main events. The big news came during the pre-show of like all these crazy announcements. You know, we mentioned one of them already. Next year, Wrestle Kingdom 2020, Wrestle Kingdom 14 will be two nights at the Tokyo Dome, not just one night. So Saturday and Sunday, January 4th and 5th. Be really interesting to see what they come up with for cards there. Like, will people wrestle? I mean, I'm sure people wrestle on both shows, but like, you know, you'd think you can't have a heavyweight title match on both nights. So, I mean, I guess you could be like, well, he's coming back to face the winner of this or something, but it'd just be really weird. So I don't know. It's going to be really, really interesting. You know, so that's the big, big news. Some of the other big news that came out, there's not going to be Sakura Genesis this year. It's not on the calendar. So the only big spring show is MSG. People, you know, were wondering how they were going to do Sakura Genesis and MSG. And, you know, the answer turns out to be they're not. They're just going to do MSG. So presumably whoever wins the New Japan Cup will get their title shot at MSG. You would have no idea that's a co-ROH show, by the way, from that video, which is like, New Japan, MSG, which I thought was really funny. G1 Supercard, that's our thing. The next big thing, making up for the lack of Ryugoku for Sakura Genesis, they're running Ryugoku for the best of the Super Junior final in June. That, to me, is like, it almost got overshadowed by the other stuff. And I'm a little bit biased because I am going to Japan in June, so I can go to this. But that was like my favorite announcement. It's like, I should have looked this up. I don't think they've done Best of Super Junior in Ryugoku in like 20 years or something. I know they've done it. I'm like almost certain they have, but it's been like a long, long time. So like we're talking like I think the 90s boom probably is the last time they did it. But yeah, so that's awesome that they're going to run Ryugoku for Best of Super Junior final. That'll be on June 5th, so 4 days before Dominion on June 9th. And then the other big news, you know, for Americans, the biggest news probably, is that they said the first night of the G1 will be in Dallas, the American Airlines Center. So they, I believe they explicitly said the first night of the G1, right? Not a G1 special show.
Like the G1 opener.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna try to get there. I'm gonna get in trouble probably, but I'm gonna try to do it.
Try to get there. Just for context sakes, that is a full size basketball arena. It's 20,000 seats is the capacity. So certainly bigger than anything they've tried to run in the past.
See, now you know what that makes me think. What? That's gonna be both blocks. I bet.
Oh, definitely.
That's gonna be like night one will be A and B instead of so like to try to draw that 20,000 seat. So that'll be great because first of all you'll have the stacked G1 night again, you know, not like this past year where the A block night one ended up being like a pretty big dud. So the real night one ended up being like a dud, whereas like the B block night one was awesome, but you had to wait for night two to get that awesome night one. This time if the blocks are really unbalanced again, you know, you'll still be guaranteed a great night one, even if it's the B block that has all the good, you know, all the good, like the high end talent.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I just want to touch one more thing. They're running in Dallas, the Mavericks Arena, and the owner of the Mavericks is Mark Cuban, who also owns the Access Network that New Japan airs their US TV on. So there's a connection there that I suspect we're probably going to hear a little bit more about coming soon. It's just, like, no offense to Dallas, but they've only run, like, L.A., and now they're going to the East Coast. But now they're going to run a 20,000-seat basketball arena in the stadium that's owned by a guy who owns the TV company there on the U.S. There's something there that I suspect is going to be interesting coming soon.
Yeah, that's very true. It's probably more there. Then, you know, the G1 is going to end at Budokan again. So the last three nights will be, the big question was, will they go back to Sumo Hall with the renovations done? Will they stay at Budokan? They are going to stay at Budokan for the last three nights. And then I guess you can talk about this, Robin. They're going to run London in August, at the end of August, for a big show for the first time. I believe it's like a 6,000 seat venue. Is that right?
I think it's set up for more like 7,500, but yeah, that kind of it's an arena that was built for the 2012 Olympics when they were over here. So it's a good one. And if they can pack that out, it'll be very impressive, because they did run, well, they ran shows under the New Japan banner, but they were basically Rev Pro shows, even though they were sold as New Japan Strong Style Evolved UK last year, and they managed to draw, I think, about 2,500 twice, which, you know, at the time was impressive, but it's obviously a big step up to go straight up to the a building that can handle around 7,500. But it's in London this time, which is obviously a bigger city than where they were running last year. So it'll be very interesting to see how they do there. Hopefully they do well, because I would love to see this become an annual thing. And, you know, given it's a sizable building, because we're now getting to the point where in the UK and in the US, they're running venues that are as big as a lot of the bigger venues they're running in Japan. As a result of that, I imagine we're going to be getting cards that are comparable to the cards that you're getting in the bigger venues in Japan. And yeah, that sounds awesome to me.
I would assume London is going to be like a G1 special type card, you'd think, if they want to sell it out or come close. So, or maybe you could say like a little, like one of the better Destruction cards, maybe, if you want to look at like post G1.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Obviously, Dallas card, if they do what I think they're going to do and just do the G1 kickoff with both blocks, then you're like guaranteeing like 10 great singles matches, and people will be very into that. But we'll see. I mean, even if they do one block, I'm sure it'll still be like loaded.
Yeah, they're going to have to put a star-studded match to sell anywhere close to 20,000 tickets.
Right, and like they usually do in the first night of the G1 is a thing. I actually think. I mean, from looking at my Twitter feed, I think the first G1 show in the U.S. will be a draw anyway. So I don't know. It'll be really interesting. I'm really tired of predicting this stuff, because like I did not think, for instance, All In was going to sell out in like 30 minutes with nothing announced. So who the fuck knows? Maybe just the MSG, same thing, like sold out and, you know, 2 hours with nothing announced. Maybe people are just going to be like, the first G1 show, I have to go to that. So I don't know. Maybe it'll just sell out immediately without anything announced. But yeah, so that was all. I think that was all the big announcements, right? Am I missing anything?
I think I got them all. So,
I mean, they didn't really announce anything.
Yeah. They're running two dome shows. I feel like we kind of glossed over that.
We talked about it.
Well, I know we talked about it, but still, that is insane.
They skipped right from London in August, in August to Dome 2020. Which people were making, I found it really funny. If you look at Twitter, people were making fun of that at first. People were like, really, you're running the Dome again, not noticing that like it was two nights. And then it's like, no, that was a pretty big announcement, actually. It wasn't just a whatever.
Yeah. But, it's just,
yeah. Insane.
Well, I think that was because kind of when the announcement started, it was like, we're running the Dome January 4th. And then it kind of like dot, dot, dot. And fifth is like, okay, that's really big, instead of just being like, of course.
Yeah.
Quite the difference there.
A little bit. But yeah, they didn't announce anything for the fall, which is interesting. It's like, if there's going to be another US date or something. Nothing for like Long Beach again. I wonder if the Long Beach stop is going to like come out now and just be like the, you know, the smaller America shows. Like, they did not mention those New Beginning of US shows at all, because I guess they're just not considered big shows. You know, they're going to be like these shows with the Shibata dudes from the LA Dojo. So maybe now LA/Long Beach will just be a stop next year on that tour if they keep doing them. Oh, they did announce another date. This wasn't in the video, but Kevin Kelly said they're going to come to Nashville after all, which, remember, they originally had it on the books and it was off the books. And now it's back on the books for that Saturday, February 2nd. So
that was reported originally by Joe Lanza of this very
season. Yes, very, very true. Give Joe a shout out. But yeah, not that he listens to this show anyway, so he wouldn't know either.
Good point.
But all right, so I guess we can wrap it up. I'm going to go collapse and go to sleep. Thank you both for coming on. Had a lot of fun here talking Wrestle Kingdom. It looks like we had a good little audience here, and you know, interacted throughout. And I appreciate you guys, you know, coming on and listening. If you did listen live, maybe we'll do a few more of these. I don't know. It's hard for me to watch New Japan live. Like I did take a day off for this, and you know, I can't really do that often. But we'll see. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. Why don't you plug away, Robin? What do you plug the Brit Res Roundtable?
Yeah, it's on this network. You'll be able to find it. I'm very tired. If you want to follow me on Twitter, BRITWRESROUND. That's both my personal wrestling account and also the account I'll be tweeting any updates for the podcast on. It's, you know, it's a similar type of deal to this, apart from Brit Rest only, and you don't really cover Brit Rest, so you know, we don't get in each other's way there, which works nicely.
I get in the way of every other podcast on the network, but not really yours, so
we have a synergy.
Jack, I guess plug your Twitter if you want.
I don't have a podcast. I wrote an essay in the Year in Review ebook that Voices of Wrestling put together for New Japan. So I guess you can check that out. I don't know the link. Go look for it. It's fine. I know you did a lot of work on that, John. My Twitter is at Packerman120. Don't follow me. You don't need to. It's okay. I don't tweet much. Other than that, I don't really got much more to say. Thanks for having me.
Wow, the viewers, just watching the viewers drop on real time the moment we got the plugs and stuff. It's like, oh, no one's talking about shit hitting anymore. But just like immediately like 20 people dropped. It's really funny. Yeah. But all right, guys, thank you again for listening. So thank you for the kind words in the chat. And if you're listening to this on the podcast form, which is going to be the vast majority of you actually once I put it up, next week's Wrestling Omakase will be our awards episode, which is always a really exciting one that I'm always having a good time with. I have to compile all those results, but I'm almost done with that, so certainly before the episode, and I have to figure out who's going to come on. It's going to be a lot of people, probably. So check out our Twitter feed at Wrestle Omakase, not Wrestling Omakase. It does not fit. And we're going to go over basically all the major categories, all the minor categories, everything you can think of. You know, everybody will give their individual picks, then we'll give the results. It was a large amount of people voting this year. A lot of the guests from a full year of the show. So I think you'll enjoy it. But that'll be next week. Tune in for that. Until then, I'm going to bed. See you next time.
Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations. Limited time only. Plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.